This is WSBT's Community Update on 96.1 WSBT.
Good morning. I'm John Hoffman. Community Update this week will consist of updates on a number of key stories from the past week. South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg continues to press his case for the Democratic presidential nomination, and his recent travels included a town hall meeting on a channel many Democrats would not appear on, Fox News. Buttigieg did not shy away from criticizing what he has seen from some hosts on Fox News.
I mean, when you got Tucker Carlson saying that immigrants make America dirty, when you've got Laura Ingraham comparing detention centers with children in cages to summer camps, then there is a reason why anybody has to swallow hard and think twice before participating in this media ecosystem. But I also believe that even though some of those hosts are not always there in good faith, I think a lot of people tune into this network who do it in good faith.
Buttigieg also told the audience his youth can be a strong asset in his campaign.
I do think there's a special value to generational change at a moment like this, because we're not just living through another election. I believe we're living through one of those transitions between moments in American history, as consequential as the one that brought us the New Deal or the dawn of the Reagan era, which I would argue is actually a 40-year period that has only now come crashing to a halt with the hostile takeover of the Republican Party by the current president. And it does call for that longer view. So everybody's got different attributes that they bring. One of the ones I bring, I think, is the possibility of that kind of generational shift.
Buttigieg is consistently ranked in the top four or five among a crowded field of nearly two dozen Democratic presidential hopefuls. We must do better. That's the message from the Indiana Department of Education after a survey showed more than 2,500 drivers statewide illegally passed school buses with their stop arms out during just a one-day survey last month.
Kids are in class for longer than just a day. A school year has 180 days, which means buses just like this could be passed hundreds of thousands of times between September and June. State educators say they are working hard to bring those numbers down, but drivers need to help. Tony Genesi, Chief Operating Officer for Elkhart Community Schools, has one thing to say to the 54 drivers who ignored Elkhart school bus stop arms earlier this spring.
Well, it's 54 too many. We should not have any violations. Our public really needs to understand how important the safety of our students is, and passing buses is just unacceptable.
It's unacceptable because children just trying to get on or off a bus could be hit.
In many instances, students could be hit. And if they're hit, they certainly can be killed. And no one wants to lose a student in any way, shape, or form, particularly on the negligence of someone from the public.
For three children in Fulton County in October, that nightmare became a reality. They were hit by a truck after police say the driver failed to obey their school bus's stop arm.
The incident that happened last year has helped to push this into the spotlight.
And Adam Baker, press secretary for the Indiana Department of Education, says that spotlight has led to laws like Max Strong. That law creates stronger penalties for people who illegally pass stopped buses. But this recent survey helped get it passed.
That data also helped influence the legislators and helped provide them with a good picture of what's going on in the state as well.
Genesi says Elkhart is looking to add stop arm cameras to its fleet, but the district is still hashing out details with local law enforcement.
That they would actually enforce it and then prosecute. That's been a question many places, whether or not the local law enforcement will enforce the laws on a video.
Elkhart wasn't the only district that participated in this survey. I also pulled the numbers for Penn Harris Madison, which had about 73 illegal stop arm passes, and Plymouth Schools as well, which only had five. We put the entire report on our WSBT.com website if you want to see where your school district ranks.
WSBT 22's Caitlin Conan reporting. Students in South Bend could soon be learning from home. The district is considering e-learning after losing nearly a week of classes to snow days this winter. WSBT 22's Caitlin Conan is back with word of a trial day this past Wednesday at Clay High School.
Students had a digital learning day with their Chromebooks. Every middle and high school student in South Bend gets one of those laptops for the school year. Today was a chance to figure out how to best use them before students need to do their schoolwork from home. Connor Cheney is a sophomore at Clay High School. He and his English class have been reading The Alchemist.
I'm bad at explaining stories, but I'll try anyway.
But when it comes to Connor's book report, it's out with the old and in with the new. Most of his work will be done on this Chromebook.
But right now we are doing like a little comic thing, and I think it's pretty cool.
Connor says this way helps him learn the story better, plus it's a lot of fun.
I think it's a better activity than just more than just like a lecture.
Connor's teachers think those Chromebooks are cool for another reason. Matt Modlin, director of digital integration for the district, says e-learning could help reduce the future number of snow day makeups.
E-learning is a way that we can continue our instruction on days that we're not able to make it into the school buildings and facilities.
But not every student has internet at home. Modlin says students can access Wi-Fi in downtown South Bend and certain parks. He's also put together a map of local organizations that offer Wi-Fi, and now he's working on mapping where more Wi-Fi might be needed for e-learning days.
So we're looking at giving 3 days to make up that work. And so really trying to be flexible and understanding of our student needs.
Connor says he'd rather have those e-learning days than lose summer days for snow day makeups.
Technically, you wouldn't be sacrificing your snow day. You'd still be at home.
Whether in the classroom or at home, Modlin and his colleagues say the Chromebooks are good for student outcomes. Almost every employer and business uses some form of technology, and Modlin says students need to be prepared for that. He says students probably won't have any e-learning days until next spring.
WSBT 22's Caitlin Conan. One further casualty of the opioid epidemic across our nation is chronic pain patients, many of whom feel stigmatized as they seek legitimate use of opioids for real ongoing pain. WSBT 22's Kristen Bean reports rallies across the country have taken place over the past couple of weeks.
These rallies are called Don't Punish Pain Rallies. Their message is pain patients are not addicts.
Man, numerous ankle sprains.
Jesse Ray has been battling chronic pain for years now.
I tried every non-opioid option.
Because of nerve pain in both feet, he uses opioid pain medication. Without it, Ray says he wouldn't be able to get around.
Even still, most days due to nerve damage. I'm in my recliner close to 20 hours a day at home.
But he says new laws and guidelines have put his prescriptions at risk.
We want the government to quit overreaching and stay out of our doctor's offices and quit passing these laws.
Ray feels doctors are cutting back on opioid prescriptions because they're being targeted by government agencies or blamed for the epidemic. He says rules and guidelines are too restrictive, and it's keeping pain patients from having their pain treated.
I'm not an addict. I'm a patient, chronic pain patient, legitimate chronic pain patient.
And experts say chronic pain patients are being stigmatized.
Now is really a bad time. It's an unfortunately an oppressive time to be a pain patient.
John Gallagher is an addiction expert. He says in some cases, the government's efforts to keep people from dying of opioid overdose has made things worse for legitimate pain patients and their doctors.
The challenge for physicians is finding who's at risk for abusing this. And who's not?
This is the reason Ray is helping organize a rally to change the stigma against chronic pain patients who say they are unintended victims of the epidemic, too.
We're patients, we're not addicts.
We reached out to Congressman Fred Upton about this. Upton said in a statement, quote, "We need a balanced approach, one that addresses the tragic opioid epidemic that has hurt families here in Southwest Michigan and across the nation, while at the same time getting non-addictive pain medications to those in need. Truthfully, developing new non-addictive pain medications is a key step to combating the opioid epidemic."
WSBT 22's Kristen Bean. Niles Charter Township trustees applied the brakes to recreational marijuana use Monday night.
They voted to opt out of recreational marijuana use. One of the trustees says people on the board are waiting until the state gives more clarification on how it can be grown, processed, and sold. When the state releases regulations, then the board will reconsider opting in. She says she wants more information before allowing it in her township.
You know, I don't think they understood how many poisonings there have been. I'm not sure that they understood, is Michigan ready for this? And I don't think we're quite there. I don't think we're ready.
Many constituents actually voted in favor of allowing recreational marijuana, and some came to the meeting and expressed why they want it. But trustees are waiting for the state to clarify how it can be grown, processed, and sold before allowing it.
WSBT 22's Lauren Becker reporting. You probably know someone who struggles with obesity. More than 93 million adults are overweight. Indiana is the 12th fattest state in the U.S. Michigan ranks 19th. It can be extremely challenging to lose that weight.
Every year, Americans spend more than $60 billion trying to lose weight through diet programs, gym memberships, and nutritional supplements. But often those plans don't work. I wanted to find out what it takes to get rid of the pounds and keep them off.
This is Amy Bulakowski and Sharon Gilbert. They've never met, but they have something in common. You might not even be able to tell just by looking, but these women were once seriously overweight.
I was at about 230, a little more than that.
It was 283 pounds, so I was almost 300 pounds.
Those pounds came with serious health concerns.
I had type 2 diabetes, cholesterol, blood pressure, sure, and of course my thyroid.
For me, that happened to be high blood pressure and sleep apnea.
Both women tried everything to get the weight off. Atkins, Weight Watchers, meal delivery programs, meal replacement programs, calorie counting.
It works. Yes, I could lose weight, but I could never keep it off.
If I did, it would be only a couple of ounces or maybe a pound, and then it didn't work.
After years of dieting and failing, both women had a wake-up call.
We have triplet grandkids. I was missing out being able to get down on the floor and play with them or just go outside and do things with them.
For Amy, it was her niece and nephew.
I was on the floor playing with them and I couldn't breathe sitting on the floor well. It really kind of hit me hard and said, you know, it's time I have to change something.
It was time for specialist help. Amy worked with bariatric surgeon Dr. Eric Knapp, while Sharon became a patient with Liz Winnett at Clear Outlook Weight Loss Solutions. Those medical professionals agree, your general practitioner doesn't always give the best weight loss advice. Knapp says their nutritional knowledge is based on the food pyramid.
So the bulk of what you should be eating is grains and carbs, which I disagree with for weight loss.
Nurse practitioner Liz Winnett says as doctors were pushing those grains and carbs, they were also demonizing fats, which she says are essential to losing weight.
What makes you feel full? Fat and protein makes you feel more full, so does fiber.
For Sharon, picking the right things to eat wasn't so much of a diet change, but a change in her relationship with food.
So I decided I would call it my healthy journey.
Which involved a keto eating plan. Keto is a high-fat, adequate protein, low-carb diet. That means Sharon has had to replace her Friday night pizza delivery with her own recipe she makes in a bowl.
There's no crust, nothing, and everything is low-carb, low-sugar, and it works perfect.
It's a change that has serious results.
I can help you turn on the natural fat burning quickly. The average person loses 3 pounds a week, which is pretty cool.
Amy has incorporated keto as part of her weight loss strategy too, but she went one step further with bariatric surgery that reduced the size of her stomach.
It's about the size of a banana.
The surgery has a short recovery time and few side effects. Plus, the part of the stomach that's removed produces the hormones that make you hungry.
So when that part of the stomach comes out, those hormones decrease, and then you end up with a smaller or reduced appetite.
Even though they've lost the weight, food is on Amy and Sharon's minds as much as ever.
You can restretch your stomach and regain every bit of weight that you've lost back, and then some, and it's not hard. It's a super easy thing to do.
You can never go back to the things that you were doing before. You have to put those in the past and go forward.
But the work has been worth it. Amy isn't just playing with her niece and nephew, she's running 5Ks with her brother.
To be able to beat him, and he's older and taller than I am, so that's really a lot of fun.
Sharon, who didn't have a lot of options before, loves shopping for new clothes.
I like this.
She's abandoned her old wardrobe.
I was not happy being this big, but I love my body and I love myself because I am so much happier being thinner and healthier.
Sharon and Amy both told me getting the right support made a big difference in losing the weight, whether that came from family members or from their weight loss team.
WSBT 22's Caitlin Conan reporting.
The views expressed on WSBT's Community Update are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, WSBT Radio, its staff, or management. Join us again next week on Community Update on The Sports Leader. 96.1 WSBT.